Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Andrew Hunneke. Our guest this week is Senate Ag Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow, who joins us to talk about the status of her farm bill and her reaction to the Republican proposals in both the House and Senate. But first, here's this week's headlines. Overall grocery store prices did not change last month, according to the latest Consumer Price Index. Decreases in milk, dairy products, eggs, and seafood offset the increased prices for chicken, pork, cereal, and bakery products. Grocery prices as a whole are expected to increase by 1.2% this year, which would be well below the 20-year average inflation rate of 2.7%. The Port of Baltimore has fully reopened following the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Crews with the Army Corps of Engineers removed about 50,000 tons of bridge wreckage from the Patapsco River during the more than two-month-long cleanup process. Sugar is the top commodity moved through the port. According to USDA data, 600,000 metric tons were moved through the port last year, along with 300,000 tons of soybeans. And finally, Senate Ag Ranking Member John Bozeman released his Farm Bill framework. Bozeman's proposal calls for an average 15% increase in price loss coverage reference prices in order to account for increases in input costs since they were first set a decade ago. His bill would also restrict USDA's Commodity Credit Corporation's spending authority and would require future USDA updates of the Thrifty Food Plan to be cost neutral. All of those proposals would differ from Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow's proposed bill, the Rural Prosperity and Food Security Act. Under her bill, PLC reference prices for cotton, rice, and peanuts would increase by 5%. Both Stabenow and Bozeman have not released any text. To start off our conversation with Chairwoman Stabenow, we asked for her reaction to Senator Bozeman's proposal.
What I would say about where the state of play right now, there's a lot of talk, great slogan, more farm in the farm bill, but the other side of the aisle, my colleagues have more farm in the farm bill for a few. Because the current even commodity payments give about 80% of the government payments to 10% of the farmers. And what they propose makes it even more extreme. So I'm concerned. We have 30% of our growers and our beginning farmers that don't get any of what's called the commodity title ARCN PLC, and that needs to be changed. We have similarities in proposals, but it's really important that we represent all regions and not make the regional divide among agriculture worse. And what's happening on the Republican side is there's dramatic increases in payments for southern crops, over 100% increase, over 100% payment increase in the commodity title for cotton, rice, and peanuts. Now, we have positive things. We have a lot of similarity in dairy. Dairy is very, very important. We have a lot of similarity in proposals I mentioned on crop insurance, area-based crop insurance. So there's a lot of similarities, but the big difference is that my Republican colleagues have put forward a huge increase in the commodity title. Not paid for, most of it not paid for at all, which causes other problems. And they're splitting the farm and food coalition, which means you can't get the votes. When you take money out of the nutrition title to fund anything else, but particularly if it's huge, massive increases, 100% increase in a government payment for certain southern crops and so on, that's just not gonna get votes. We're gonna lose votes on that.
Going back to the text of your bill, we haven't seen anything released on that yet. Do you have a timeline, at least, for when that may be released?
Well, the great news is we've put together a section-by-section, very detailed, over 90 pages of detail on every single proposal, every single piece of this. So the next step is to negotiate a bipartisan bill if we're going to get this done, and hopefully write joint text. Senator Bozeman put out, I'm very glad that he has put out something. He put out a one-pager on each of the 12 titles. So we have done a much more specific deep dive, over 90 pages on every single policy that we put out. But to do this right, we got to come together and negotiate a bipartisan bill. That's the only way we get it done.
Continuing with negotiations, eventually guys are going to also have to negotiate with the House.
Absolutely.
There's a possibility that a bill may not even get passed through there by September. So can you even negotiate with Chairman Thompson before that deadline? Is it even a possibility?
Well, I think we should be negotiating now. And Chairman Thompson and I have had many conversations. I like him very much, as I like Senator Bozeman. This is not personal at all. It's just a different view of the world in terms of how do you get a farm bill, and how do we make sure we support all farmers? I mean, that's my goal. And so I think we should be doing that right now. I think, unfortunately, it's pretty safe to say that what came out of the House committee can't get the votes on the House floor as it's written right now. It just won't get the bipartisan votes. And so I don't want to bring a bill out of the committee in the Senate that has the same fate. It needs to be bipartisan. We need to be negotiating it together. The way you get a farm bill is making sure everybody's in. And so that recognition hasn't happened yet. Once it does, we'll write a farm bill and we'll get it done.
We'll be right back with more from Chairwoman Stabenow right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. Chairwoman Stabenow says it's been challenging during this farm bill process to keep partisanship out of agriculture committees.
Well, one of the things that's very disheartening for me is that we've always been able to keep the agriculture committees separate from partisanship. And now it's really bleeding into that in a way that's, particularly in the Senate, we've been able to do that in the past. And we've done it on other issues, working together. But it's a very challenging time right now. But the rhetoric, I mean, we to this day are still seeing rhetoric put out that's just not accurate on things like we've seen an 85% increase in the nutrition funding since the last Farm Bill. Well, that was COVID. That was COVID and high cost. We've also seen 112% increase in the farm payments because of COVID and because of trade payments and so on. What we need is to like cut the rhetoric, sit in the room, look at what's doable, get the very best farm bill for all farmers without shortchanging families. And we can do that. But people have to want to get a farm bill done to do that. So I'm working hard to do it.
Let's talk about the possibility of an extension, because we've been talking about that for a while now. If an extension happens and there's no bill passed this year, there could be less IRA money to work with next year. Actually, there will be less IRA money to work with next year if the Farm Bill gets drafted then. Are you concerned about that?
Well, I'm concerned in general. Farmers need a five-year farm bill. I don't think it gets easier next year. I won't be here next year. I'm retiring. So others will have to deal with that. But I don't think it gets easier next year. I think we need to be doing that right now. Farm bills never get done in time. There's always at least one extension. I've done this, you know, six different farm bills, never done exactly on time. Some extended more than once. But we need a five-year farm bill. And it's really not about the conservation money, because that's going to farmers. It all goes to farmers. What helps us long term is if dollars from the IRA are brought into the conservation baseline for the long term. That's the win-win. But it needs to be focused on those 49 different top most popular programs that actually address the climate crisis.
And just to wrap up, I do want to talk about your legacy. You did mention there that you're going to be retiring, not seeking re-election. Just talk to us more about how important this farm bill really is to your legacy.
I have lived and breathed working in agricultural policy and food policy the whole time that I've been here. And one of the things I'm proudest of is that we have expanded the farm bill to have more farm in the farm bill for every farmer. And so we didn't have a specialty crop title when I came in. We now have a specialty crop title. We now have a public-private research foundation that we didn't have before. We're doing a better job on dairy. We're doing risk management. We've got more crop insurance options. My legacy in this farm is to not go backwards. Not to go backwards. The 2018 bill is a solid framework. I want to build on it. We need to do more. As I said, farmers' costs are not going down, they're going up. They need more certainty.
Chairwoman Stabenow, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion, but first, our Jake Sikowski has more on soybean costs in the United States and Brazil in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
New data from the USDA Economic Research Service shows Brazil challenging the United States' competitiveness in the soybean market. Both countries are the top producers of soybeans globally, but the cost to produce an acre of soybeans in the U.S. increased 2.6% annually from 2010 to 2022. While Brazil's cost increased 0.5%. This graph shows the soybean farm production cost per acre in the US and Brazil. On average, production costs per acre for soybeans in Brazil were 22.5% lower than the United States cost. And since 2010, the US has always had a higher cost per acre. The large difference is due to Brazil having lower capital and land cost while having the capacity to grow two crops per year. Whereas in the United States, farmers have higher land cost, more limited seasons, and use their machinery per single operation, compared to Brazil's hired out equipment and labor business patterns. For both producers, the transportation of soybeans to ports adds to the cost of soybeans paid by overseas buyers. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zakowski.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel is going to be focused on what's currently happening with the Farm Bill. Excited to be joined by Sam Kiefer with the American Farm Bureau Federation and Ann McMillan with Invariant. And Sam, I wanted to start with you to begin. You know, Farm Bureau came out and said that Senator Bozeman's Farm Bill proposal is encouraging, but at the same time, more progress needs to be done. What needs to happen between Republicans and Democrats to make sure that they can find some common ground in the Senate?
Let's take a step back quickly. Several weeks ago, Chairwoman Stabenow said she wants to negotiate with the other side before scheduling a markup. And we recently saw Ranking Member Bozeman put out his proposal. So at this point, all the chess pieces are on the board. That's a good step. What we need to do now is get members of the committee talking, get members of the committee negotiating, and to schedule a markup. What we have are mainly disagreements over the pay-fors. I believe, and we believe, if we can get both sides in the room negotiating, we believe they'll find that they're not nearly as far apart as they are. Most of the provisions are really, really close. The major disagreements are on the pay-fors.
And Ann, I do want to bring you in now to this conversation. We know that Senator Bozeman's bill kind of crosses some red lines when it comes to Senator Stabenow's bill. So do you think both sides can come to a compromise?
Well, gosh, I really hope so. I think there's two very committed leaders in the Senate with Senator Bozeman and Chairwoman Stabenow who are deeply committed to getting a farm bill this year. And so I think, you know, I'm hopeful that they will get there, but this pay for issue is an issue. We don't have enough money to fund everything that we need to fund in this farm bill. We will have less money next year. So I'm hopeful that people sort of understand that and are really committed to getting it done under the framework that we have currently in 2024, using the pay for of the Thrifty Food Plan, taking away all of the talking points about it. It is just a red line for Democrats. I have been actually surprised at how hard of a line that the Democrats have drawn on this issue, and they're really not budging. And so I think we need to have some really creative options moving forward to address that pay for in particular.
Let's move over to the House now. We did see Chairman Thompson and the House Ag Committee approve a bill through the markup session, but at the same time, he's going to need to keep Democratic support to get that bill to pass through the House. What do you think he needs to do to accomplish that? And what is your reaction to the markup in general?
It was good. Members were engaged. I think it was a real kickoff moment for what I consider to be the sort of the go time for the farm bill in order to get it done this year. But there are only four Democrats that voted for it at the end. And in order to get more and to be able to get this bill in off the House floor, you know, significant changes will need to be made in order to garner additional support. And as I said just before, this issue of the Thrifty Food Plan pay for will continue to prevent, I think, wide-scale adoption by the Democrats. So, you know, unfortunately, we may have to go back to somewhat of the drawing board on this pay for in particular. And then that's not, you know, there are additional concerns on the other two pay fors. But I think the real heart of the Democratic concern is with the Thrifty Food Plan changes going into the out years.
We'll be right back with the rest of our panel discussion right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. Sam Kiefer with the American Farm Bureau Federation says people should worry about polarization in Congress on every issue, not just in the farm bill.
Well, it's not just farmers, and it's not just the farm bill. I think constituents should be worried about, you know, the polarization in Congress on just about every issue. It's no secret that Congress hasn't been able to accomplish much these last 2 years. The reality is we have razor-thin majorities in both chambers, and that requires bipartisanship to move forward. That requires negotiating, that requires giving and taking, that requires willing to do the hard work to compromise. The complicating factor is it's a political season, and not just a regular political season, it's a presidential election year at that. Everybody should be concerned about, you know, what seems to be a stalemate. Hopefully we can break through the logjam, because, you know, farmers, ranchers, rural Americans, families, rural educators, rural physicians, extension agents, there's a lot at stake here, and it impacts a lot of people.
And we'll get to the possibility of an extension in a moment, but before we get there, what are you hearing from farmers about the current state of the farm bill?
Well, I'm hearing that they're frustrated. I'm hearing dismay. They're not surprised, but still frustrated. You know, we're nearly 2 years into farm bill process. We've had hearings, we've had field hearings, we've had round tables, and in the House we've had a markup. It's time to keep that ball rolling with markup and progress in the Senate and continued progress in the House. There's a lot at stake, and there's a lot to be thankful for. You know, the House version has a lot of good things in it. You know, our folks are saying they're thankful for the dairy reform. Our folks are saying they're optimistic about the farm safety net enhancements. They talk about what they like in the crop insurance, increased access, decrease in cost. All of that is for naught if we can't close the deal.
And wrapping up, I would like to ask both of you guys this question. I'm going to start with you, Ann. Do you expect an extension for this farm bill? And if that happens, how will that impact producers?
You know, unfortunately, I do think we're looking at an extension because there just simply isn't a lot of legislative time between now and September 30th when you include the August recesses and the times that Congress is taking for conventions. I represent a lot of folks who are very dependent on this farm bill passing in this calendar year. Some commodities are really struggling out there, and a lot of people who maybe aren't struggling have been told they had to wait for 5 years to make really important updates to programs that they depend on at USDA or that will meet where they are in the marketplace today. So we have to get this farm bill done. And just to be clear, everyone knows that. And I think all the members of the House and Senate Ag Committees and the leadership deeply understand that we have to get this done. It's just really, really hard. This is the hardest one I've seen. They're always hard, but I think this one is particularly challenging with the money and the thin margins in both the House and Senate.
And Sam, what about you, sir? What do you think?
I think, Andrew, the more important question is, does Congress have the political will? I hope they do. I'm hearing that they do. But what it takes is for both sides to come to the aisle, roll up their across the aisle, roll up their sleeves and get the job done. Let me talk about, however, why an extension is not the right answer. If we wait another year to get to the farm bill, China's already outspending the United States 2-1 on agricultural research. If we punt the farm bill another year, we lose an opportunity to do enhancements and fixes to the dairy title on dairy margin coverage. Fix the higher of issue from legislative language before. We fail to provide opportunities for new and beginning farmers to have access to base acres and enhance their farm safety net. We lose an opportunity, according to my understanding of congressional budgeting, to take some of the Inflation Reduction Act spend on conservation programs and save that in the baseline for future use in farm bill programming. There's a lot at stake, and kicking the can down the road again is not the right option.
Certainly a lot to be paying attention here as we move forward. Sam, Ann, thank you both for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Jake Sikowski has more on the adoption of cover crops through federal conservation programs in this week's Map It Out.
The University of Illinois's Farm Doc looked at the adoption of cover crops in each state through three federal conservation programs: the Environmental Quality Incentive Program, or EQIP, the Conservation Stewardship Program, also known as CSP, and the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, RCPP. These farm federal policies aid in the adoption of cover crops across the country, but at varying rates based on location and program. This map shows the cover crop investments of those programs by state. Green represents low cover crop investments, while blue states have the highest investment, like Iowa, which makes up 8.12% of total U.S. investments in the EQIP, CSP, and RCPP programs. Since 2024, $818 million from the EQIP program has been invested in cover crops, $66 million in the CSP program since 2018, and $34 million by RCPP since 2015. To put those numbers into perspective, the total assistance for cover crops was equal to 4.5% of total EQIP dollars, 1% of total CSP spending, and 5% of total RCPP spending. Other states with the highest investments in cover crops include Tennessee, Indiana, and Missouri. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Only the Senate is expected to be in session. USDA will release its monthly cattle on feed and milk production reports on Friday. The department's monthly broiler hatchery and livestock slaughter reports come out Wednesday. As always, stay tuned for this and more on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.